From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 399, recorded live Thursday, November 21st, 2013. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Chris Dancy about the quantified self.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Chris Dancy, who Wired called the quantified man. How are you?
All right. The headline was obsolete tech worker.
The obsolete tech worker?
Yeah, the obsolete tech worker who rebuilt his life, but inside they called me the quantified man, and they had like a video hangout on their YouTube channel where people threw vitriol at me that I was some type of digital Satan. But yeah,
let's explore why you're a digital Satan. I know that I have. So what does it mean to be quantified? I think it means to measure lots of things about yourself. And as a diabetic, I've got my Fitbit, I've got my blood sugar meter, I've got my continuous glucose meter, and I've got my insulin pump. So amongst my peer group, I'm pretty darn quantified.
You are pretty darn quantified.
I met you on an airplane, though, either yes. Going to or coming from South by Southwest.
Two, because I was so excited, and then I met you, and then I got even more excited.
Yes. And you have a lot more data about yourself and your movements and the things that you do than I do.
Yes, and actually, I was just at a conference called Defrag, which is a API developer, or it's a kind of a developer, kind of smart. I don't know what kind of conference it is. I'm not going to pretend like I know what I'm talking about. And I was finally asked a question no one's asked me in 2 years, because I went to Cyborg Camp 2 years ago and then came out of my data closet by accident when I showed somebody something. But somebody said to me, how much data do you have on yourself? And I said, what do you mean? And they're like, you know, you have all these systems collecting data. I guess I'll officially sign your show because you've got a really cool show here. I officially have 14 terabytes and four years of text data on everything from did I take a screenshot to what song did I listen to how much did I walk to you name it. How many times did I use the restroom? I mean, but it's all, for me, it's all low friction, right? So no work involved, right? I have to just live my life. I have to be on the air with you and data has to be collected. And that has to then be presented to me in a way that's searchable, in a way that's visual. I use a Google Calendar for the visual. I tied it all to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then ultimately, I've been playing around with Stanford's deep learning engine to dump large chunks of it in there to find out what I can get.
Okay, so let's back up and then we'll this is good though. That's what I'm here for. Let's take this apart a little bit at a time. Self-quantification, this is the idea that I'm going to do passive things, whether it be wearing a wristband or carrying a phone in my pocket. You're probably excited about the iPhone motion processor.
Love it.
And you simply live your life. You're not like keeping a logbook or checking a box. You're not being obsessive. Being obsessive compulsive, but you're not being actively obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of QSers that don't find me to be particularly appealing.
What was that term you just said?
Quantified selfers. They call them QSers.
Okay.
There are a lot of, because I don't do the work, right? I'm not sitting and logging. And QS is beautiful because these people have taken time to really document and capture large portions of their life. They got journals that are just, you know, very intricate. It looks like something Da Vinci would create. And then they turn them into these beautiful art projects. Yeah, I'm going to New York City this weekend to see Nicholas Fenton's. He's having a sale and he gets really into personal data art. For me, I don't have time. So, you know, if I can set up a routine to collect some information in the background, then that's good for me. Mm-hmm. And I believe that information can be harvested and used in some amazing ways. And we're starting to see that that's actually what's happening, especially when, you know, more people talk about Internet of Things and more people talk about quantified self. You know, my whole thing is if you take the quantified self at a very low friction, mom's just baking cookies, and you take the Internet of Things, the kitchen's just doing things without mom, and you marry those two pieces of data together, you have what I call existence as a platform.
Existence as a platform. Now, how is this different, or how does this relate to the kind of life logging where you see like different researchers go and plug cameras in, or they wear something around their neck, and they're filming and they're recording. They're like TiVoing their entire existence. Oh, and he's put on the Google Glass. Okay, so they are complementary things.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, there seems, I mean, I was just at the QS conference. I did one of their little keynotes 2 weeks ago, and there definitely seems to be some overlap. Although no one's willing to come out and say what the difference is. You know, that's,
well, it seems to me that the difference is measurement is different to me, and measurement and data mining is different from, recording of the, I almost had a thought there. I'm trying to say that, like, keeping a bunch of data, time-based data, seems different to me than just running a surveillance camera.
Yeah. So the absence or, life logging, really at its essence, is surveillance inside out, which is in French is called sous-valence. And when you
that when is you, a freaking awesome word.
Thank you. And when you kind of record and capture, you know, when you are the camera, I think that's important. I think in some ways, you know, Google Glass, all these other silly things that are out right now. I'm a Modo user too. Or sorry, it's now called Narrative, which is a little camera that clips to your shirt. Those people, you know, I think that's really interesting. I think that's a great way. I think it should be even easier. So a device that I love that hasn't come out yet, but it's on Kickstarter, is called Capture with a K. But like, pretend you and I are just talking right now, and you say something really amazing, like you always do, like earlier, healthcare is my mortgage. I can just tap the wrist, and the capture is passively recording all the time, which, you know, people should be more worried about these devices, not Google Glass. But if it's, and then you know, your kid says something amazing, you just tap it, and then it captures it, right? That's so powerful, right? So I think life logging is really cool, and, you know, people have called me a life logger, but I really believe that, there's too many people out of work. There's too many people who are underemployed, and there's too many people who are confused about what will be around in 5, 6, 10 years. And if we don't use personal information like solar energy as a renewable source, both for yourself and for your environment, I just think we're doomed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the essence the essence there that I think is most important is that to simply log stuff for logging's sake could arguably be called a compulsion or obsessive compulsion.
Yeah, and that's what they said on YouTube. That when I did the Wired thing, I was OCD or something.
Well, and whether you are or not, I think you probably are, but I would also say that that's why you're successful. I know for a fact that I have OCD tendencies, and that's why I'm a good diabetic.
Yeah.
If I didn't, I've been checking my blood sugar 10 times a day for 20 years. You know what I mean? And I like to pause and let the gravitas of that sink in. You know, it's not, I'm not looking for,
let's
pit.
Do it
not,
again. Yeah. How many times a day?
10 times a day
for 20 years.
Yeah. The thing is, once you've reached 40 and beyond, then you get to start saying 20 years, like it's a big deal, which is great if kids are in their 20s. You know, since before you were born, son.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to saying that. But my point is, if I didn't have a little bit of OCD, I wouldn't keep it up, right? You get info fatigue.
And I have no problem with being labeled OCD. I think the problem I have when people use that term, and I'm related to this conversation, is we, as a culture, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about right now women in tech and misogyny and all sort of that kind of stuff. I wish we'd stop abusing mental health terms as just throwaway things.
No, that's a valid point. There needs to be another word.
And I'm not calling you on the carpet. I'm just like, I'm so tired.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think you're right.
Everybody I know always goes, I'm ADHD. I'm like, I don't know if maybe, or another one, I'm bipolar. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe if you knew someone who was bipolar, it wouldn't be a joke to you.
No, that's a very valid point. A lot of people I know are saying that, I think I may have adult ADHD. And I say, I think you probably just have internet. Have internet at your house. And that's
and really what I do with my information is create inner net.
Ooh. You're just dropping the knowledge. Okay. So,
but that's what it's about.
Absolutely right.
But if we leave the internet,
right,
all we have left is the internet.
The internet, right. This is important because it's one thing to have OCD, or we need to find a non-mental health related way
it's
to
fine
say.
To use that. Sorry.
No, but I think it's a valid point. But it's another thing to use that data. Now, my point is, I talk to other diabetics a lot. I'm using diabetes as the example because that's what I understand.
Yep.
And they'll say, well, what do you use to log? Mm. And I said, well, I don't actually save the data. Mm. I save a window of it. So for me, the logging created psychic weight and stressed me out. And I know that there is a log available, and I could look at the last year, 2 years, 5 years, and do something about it. But ultimately, the momentary, the instantaneous stress of diabetes is more important to me. So I have a window of about 5 hours that I care about. And I care about it down to the minute. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Or it's your life and death.
But after that, I don't really care how I did yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think people also think that I review, you know, all of this data about my life. I'm exactly like you. I could care less. Mm-hmm. You know, where it comes in handy is when I need something situationally. When did you talk to Scott? Or really cool stuff. When was your voice above 71 decibels? So when you can Google the inner net.
There you go.
It becomes hot.
See, that's interesting. Now, funny story, and this is true because, and this is again the tiny quantified self talking to the actual quantified self. My wife and I are at this noodle place and I'm like, we have not been here since March. And I'm like, no, we were here in June. And we had that kind of standard, you know, marital argument. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure we were here. She's like, no, you're insane. It's like, okay, whoa, you're taking this way too seriously.
Yeah,
so
way
too seriously. So I bring up Foursquare and I show her the check-in. Yeah. I just scroll back and I go, no, here we were and here's the time. And she goes, oh, wow, you know where we were at all times? And I was like, well, I mean, anything important. Like, yeah. I don't know where I was between this noodle place and the gas station, but I know where I checked in.
Right.
There is proof that we were there. And that stopped the argument. It was kind of cool. And I had actually forgotten about it. I do that maybe twice a year.
I don't think GPS is actually to get us places. It's to keep the people sitting next to us quiet.
Yeah. I really like that.
Tech is a weapon. I don't know why we just don't explore that, you know.
Yeah.
I started to swear. So.
Yeah. I appreciate that. We don't work blue here on Hansel Minutes.
Yeah.
So that was another thing where I didn't realize that I'd been passively collecting this data. I like being mayor. That's why I do Foursquare. Like my kids.
A good example passively. So there's an app called Moves, and it's on iOS, it's on Android, it's probably on Windows Phone by now, it's probably on everything. I don't know, but it passively collects movement and stuff. So you don't actually have to wear trackers and stuff. It's one of the ones I love. But they've opened up their back end of their API so people can develop for it. And there's this one called Moves Export I found the other week, which checks you in frictionlessly behind the background into Foursquare.
Mm.
And what's nice about that frictionless check-in is for what you talked about. My fear, though, is, you know, again, you have all this brilliant data about yourself and where you've been and when you were mayor, and you literally have no access to it. I always say to someone, literally, go to Facebook and show me what you posted last week. They're like, I'd rather rip out my legs, you know, rip off my face, you know, there is no easy way for people to have what I call perspective as a service. Where is my information and why can't I see it? It's important to me right now. We totally ruined file systems. We had hierarchies of folders, network connected drives. Oh, I don't know. Let's go crazier, right? Let's create the internet and put stuff all over the place. And if we don't somehow get a handle on our personal information, you know, you're misfiling something. It's going to seem like, you know, a Word document in a folder is going to seem like the least of our problems when you can't find out when Rocco, my dog, has seizures. When was his last seizure? You know, I've got two things, right? I've got a tracker on his neck, and then I've got an ambient noise sensor in the living room. So I can tell you, you know, I can triangulate that sort of thing. So I get really passionate about why it's so important for people to at least have access to their data.
Right. And it's very frustrating that we can Google the entire internet in a second. But
you can't tell me anything about yesterday.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. Or I can't, you know, search Outlook in less than 5 minutes and have a crash.
Or just show me the documents you opened yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've got a ton of them. This is what's going on at work. People are always like, you know, oh, my work, my job. No one can show me what they do for work. And the only quantified ways we have work are my unread emails and my appointments. I don't know.
Here's a thing you may not know about. This is funny. There's a buddy of mine who has an
Apple. Cool stuff.
Sorry, say it again.
You know cool stuff.
I do know some stuff. Check this out. This application called Time Snapper.
Mm-hmm.
It is a background screenshot maker. Do you know about this app?
Yep. Well, I don't know about the app. The concept that they use it in Odesk. So if you hire someone for a micro task, one of the ways you can monitor them is through constant screenshots.
Oh, okay. So if you have like a virtual assistant or whatever, you can see if they're really on Facebook or they're really doing the job.
Yeah.
So when you're an independent consultant and you're doing your time cards, it's like, well, what was I doing at 3:00? Oh, I was goofing around on the internet. There it is. It's like TiVo. It's like a DVR for your desktop. I think that's a great idea. But you got to be able to access that data. And you're saying that it's spread out. It's in this API and that API. You seem to aggregate all of that. You bring it all. You're using Google Calendar as your database?
So everything comes in. The process is, you know, very simple. Four steps. Collect, protect, reflect, project. So collect, I just got to get it all in there somehow. And that's like, and it's got to be low friction. So A, what can I use? And I switch applications, devices, sensors, and services like people change, take showers, right? I'm like, oh, that's gone now. I found something better. If I can get the data, if I can find a system that gets it out via RSS or through, you know, any like a Yahoo pipe or IFT or Zapier, or I can just write a hack to get the information out, I'll use it. And then I just want basic things, location, time, duration. I've got a bunch of bullet points that I created, what I call these kind of insights when in data insights. Mm-hmm. And then I just move that into a Google spreadsheet to collect it.
Mm-hmm.
I also then, or any type of access, I could use Microsoft, anybody's spreadsheet. And then I move it into a calendar view. I then store it in a cloud just as a text dump in Evernote. And then that gets exported out using into text, just raw text dumps, onto my files. And that's really, I have 14 terabytes of text dumps. So, and then the last part is, you know, how do you actually deal with that? And that's where you actually, you know, you can do some correlation looking at it. So a bunch of weird examples. I could give a ton of how just the voice one I used earlier, you know, the lady who helps me clean my house, you know, I hired her about 6 months ago and I could never figure out why Sundays I was getting so just sick to my stomach. And as soon as I put in a indoor weather station on my desk, mm-hmm. right? I knew the air quality was toxic because I was getting feedback, right? And I was like, oh, I'm sleeping like crap on Saturday night and I'm waking up and I have a headache by Sunday afternoon. And I can't, oh, okay. We're toxic air. And it smells like chemicals. It's lovely.
So it's the cleaning Pine chemicals?
Salt. It was cleaning chemicals. So I just leave when she's here now. I have no more problems on Sunday.
That is a first world problem right there.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's, yeah, first world. It's a lithium problem.
Yeah, there's that. So what do you, I understand the collect part and I see the idea of bringing it all in into some central format and dumping it. But on the outside, on the dashboard, I mean, I feel like you'd need like a Google Analytics or a Hadoop or something like that to really mine this. Cause that's a laptop's not going to be able to effectively build you a view of your life with multiple terabytes of data.
No. So the easiest way for me to do it is to just search the, you know, like I said, I pump most of it for, I think, public sake through a Google Calendar, and I tie it. The 10 areas in my life are like financial, spiritual, health, right? So every data stream hits one of those areas and it's color coded and it's, those colors tie to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And, I basically then say that's it. So that's one way I can see. The second way I can do it is search that information. The third way I can do it, like when you're going down the bigger, big data, 14 terabytes of it, that's where I just started playing with a lot of these deep learning engines that are mm-hmm. open source and just taking massive amounts of information and dumping them there. And what's just so absolutely compelling is, you know, a lot of people use these deep learning engines for sentiment analysis on, you know, websites or, you know, the public, you know, is the public happy right. about Twitter's IPO? When you can dump personal data in there, it's like mind-blowingly cool because you're like, yeah, that was a bad day. I remember it. And actually, this is right. Right.
You know, that is such an interesting thing. I think that I want to dig into that because sometimes people forget to have actual, you know, non-opinion based data about something. Very often I will, actually recently I was at a conference and, I got a soda. And I said, I don't think this is diet. Mm. And the lady was like, no, I promise it's diet. And I drank it. And 10 minutes later, I had a chart that was showing my blood sugar going up and I started to get sick. And I didn't want to be that guy. You know what I mean? Like the, is this diet guy?
Yeah. But I'm that guy, by the way. Well, I do that.
But I don't want to be that guy. I'm a little bit more like, I will hurt myself rather than be that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple hours into it, I was just like, oh man, I just drank an entire regular soda and that, I'm going to be dealing with this for the next 6 hours. So I was up all night kind of dealing with that. But it was funny because I had the numbers to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before I would have been like, I don't really know if that was that diet? You know what I mean?
I had an incident last year where, and I've had a few of these and, you know, I have to be very careful about how I phrase this, but I've had a few incidents where I've had run-ins with people or organizations. We'll just put it that way. And they'll say, well, you know, that's your point of view and that's just not true. And then I just hand them a mountain of data and they literally collapse. Because, you know, you can say what you want about collecting data, but you don't want to tell the most quantified person on earth that he did or said something that ruined your day if he can prove everything he did and said.
Yeah, it definitely is going to make it really hard for me to frame you for murder.
No, I mean,
we have to get you an episode of Law and Order. Where you
I just like that sound. Cha-ching.
Yeah, we have to have, you know, Chris has murdered someone. It's like, well, actually, no, because the humidity at the time, you know what I mean? That's very interesting.
Clue for the quantified self.
Yes, absolutely. That would that's interesting to have it, or a Sherlock Holmes kind of a thing, like you're the mystery person and you are keeping track of all of the environmental details while solving crimes. You'd be like Monk, except with data to back it up.
Yeah.
So
qualified Monk.
Are people now? You are an extreme. You're on the far end. There are those that don't think about any of these things and they just listen to their bodies. But yes. I think that the regular kind of average internet connected person is starting to move more in your direction.
Oh yeah.
We've got the iPhone 5S with this motion processor in it. And I didn't realize this, but it's actually collecting data even if an app is not asking for it.
Yeah. And you've got the Galaxy S4, which is collecting temperature, humidity, and pressure.
Really? And and it's just keeping it?
It's just keeping it. You've got the Moto, which is always passively listening, the Moto X. You know, this is why I think it's so important that we start thinking about the internet, right? This is, and I just pulled this term out of my, you know, collective back end at a conference because someone said, you know, why would you do this? And I'm like, well, I need to search myself like the internet. And then I kind of said it kind of fast. I'm like, oh, I meant internet. And then it just became this thing. And I'm like, that makes sense to me. So, you know, these phones are going to get more and more sensors. Our houses are getting more and more connected. You know, it's just like early web. It's very defragmented. Nobody wants to talk to somebody. We don't have a Tim Berners-Lee to come in and sort the stuff out, you know, so who knows?
I've been getting connected without realizing it. I added the Fitbit and it's on my wrist now. And it took about a week to get used to having this thing on my wrist. Mm-hmm. Yep, there's yours. And I got an Aria scale, and I see there's one right there behind you. That's a really great thing. Step on the scale every morning, and now I know how much I weigh, and it's really helping me.
Hey, you want some hot scale tech?
Okay. What do we got for hot scale tech?
Hot scale tech. Just a hot scale tech minute. They've got this, again, I love pre-tail. I am big into Kickstarter. Anytime I can buy pre-tail over retail, I'm down.
Pre-tail.
Right?
Man.
Pre-tail.
I got to write all these cool terms down.
Yeah. So out on Kickstarter, they've got this thing where you put, these little sensors underneath your bedposts. So you don't weigh yourself. Just when you sleep, you're weighed automatically.
So you tear your desk, your zero is your bed by itself.
Yeah.
And then you get on the bed.
Yeah.
And it weighs you.
Yeah. Effortlessly. And that's what I, you know, ambient or calm technology. It just gets out of the way. And why wear a bunch of sensors to track your sleep if the sensors are tracking the weight of the bed can know if you were rolling around or not? There's something called Bedit that, you know, actually does your heart rate, but it wraps over the mattress. So you don't wear anything. It just, when you're rolling around, it's cutting. I just think this is kind of geeky stuff.
Well,
sorry,
I think it's deeply geeky. It is above first world. It's zeroth world.
It's Elysium. I call it data Elysium.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
I interrupted you about that whole, so you got your Fitbit.
Well, my point
is
that I'm not actively trying to quantify myself, but
you are.
I am indirectly doing it.
Yeah.
I installed recently the Nike, this app just came out 3 days ago called the Nike Plus Move app.
Ooh.
It's the very first app for the motion detector. So on the iPhone. So I put the thing in.
How does the most connected man on earth not know this?
Well, there you go. See?
There you go.
So the Nike Plus Move application, here's the scary part. It already had 10 days of data on me.
Nice.
Because it pulled it out of the motion coprocessor. So it's collecting data even though it's not running. And it's not that there's a background process. The processor itself is keeping that data. So that became really, really interesting. I was like, oh, wow. And then I started to correlate that with Fitbit and things like that.
Yeah.
And
You know, about collecting data without really noticing it, you know who's been doing this for decades and probably centuries? Our spouses. They're watching everything we're doing, right? So, you know, I think in some ways, and we do it with our kids, you know, the biggest thing I struggle with, Scott, is now that I've been doing this for 3 years, is sometimes, like, even if I look at you right now, I actually have to not directly look at you in the Skype hangout because I see mountains of information around you, just like the Matrix. And it's really hard because I had to literally start to study Buddhism and to meditate because I was leaving physical space. You know, people talk about, oh, they're checked out because he's using technology. There's a level beyond checking out because you're using your phone too much when you see people as bits.
And it's
scary.
So I took my kids to Sherlock Holmes. My kids are 6 and 8, and there's a Sherlock Holmes exhibit. And when it comes to your town, you should check it out. It's really one of the best Museum of Science exhibits I've seen.
I got three things on my list now.
It's fantastic. So we go to this thing, and they've set up this full-sized diorama, effectively, of Holmes's room. And they give you a list of things to look for, kind of like Where's Waldo? This is your practice. Like, do you find Holmes's cane. So the kids are like, and we're looking at, this is full size, right? This is a set effectively. So then, okay, now the kids are starting to exercise their brains. So then we go downstairs to the next part of the Sherlock Holmes exhibit, and it is a complete crime scene.
Nice.
And the kids spend 2 hours with their little notebooks doing like rubbings of footprints and all this kind of stuff to figure out what's going on. And
did you do it or did you just have your kids do it?
No, no, I did it too. I did it
too. Good for you.
And there's like, there's 16 possibilities about like, you know, what could have happened, and they got it right. So they were paying attention. And what was interesting about it is that now they're looking at people in that kind of Monk or Sherlock Holmes way. Like, you have mud on your shoes.
Yeah.
Where were you? Were you in the backyard? Or, you know, did you wash your hands? Well, I don't think you did because your nails are dirty.
In so many ways, we do this online too. You know, I always tell people, you know, don't think about people using, don't create content online for people who are going to read it. Create content online for people who pattern watch.
Mm.
And if you create connected pattern watching experiences, you have people's attention, right? Because they're looking for they're looking exactly like you just described. They're looking for the clues. So put a word here, a picture there, something else. I mean, I've had people go to me, wow, that was really cool. I said, what? And they describe the situation to me. Like, what do you mean? Well, I saw it on Instagram. Then I saw you posted something on Foursquare. And then on Google Plus, you put something. And then in your LinkedIn. And they literally made my day. So then I started experimenting. Could I leave just the smallest amounts of information across 10, 15, 20 networks to see people would reconstruct my day for me? Absolutely every time.
Yeah, yeah. There are those that are kind of, we call it low-key stalking is what we call that.
Low-key stalking.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the young people call it. I've been on like Instagram and people will talk about that. They'll say, yeah, you know, I'm kind of low-key stalking his Instagram, but I got to make sure I don't double tap or I'll like that picture and then they'll know that I'm creeping around.
What the Facebook does is when they introduced hashtags now, I think it's amazing if you just do some hashtag searches for how many people don't know they're publicly posting.
Oh, yeah. They have no idea.
It's almost like reading a 12-year-old's diary. It's like, ooh, you just want to lick your hand. You can go wash yourself with Purell. It's like, don't hashtag search on Facebook. It's not for the faint of heart.
Let's bring it back around to talk about how we do something with this data. I didn't realize that even though I don't tap my Fitbit before I go to bed, I can go back and say, well, I was sleeping between this time and this time, and it will reconstruct my sleep and tell me when I was, you know, moving back and forth. And this is not something I'm used to doing. You, of course, do this all the time, but I realized that I'd only slept 5 hours 3 days in a row, and I was about to hit the wall. Then it did, in fact, hit the wall. Had I not done that sleep logging, I would have just slept in and missed a meeting. You know what I'm saying? It's what's interesting to me isn't the collecting of the data, but it's the using it to make my life better, to change something.
So there's a couple layers, right? There's the, you talked earlier about, you know, you weren't going to hit your step limit yesterday. So, you know, you got on the treadmill and now you're talking about the sleep stuff. So I think, you know, there's almost like a level one where, you know, the information and the devices and sensor service applications, they enhance your relationship with your own information. So in some way, it's like getting to know you so that you can change behavior. Level two is really where you have this assisted relationship. And this is where, you know, I really like to focus a lot of my work and personal research. And that's how do I hook up these devices to assist me? So if I do raise my voice, I can raise my voice like this and you'll notice the lights will start to dim, right? If my heart rate gets too high, the house temperature changes. And then there's the adaptive experience. And that's the one I'm coding up now. And that's where I really wanted to look at my calendar tomorrow and start to introduce, music and experiences and environmental conditions and suggestions to optimize tomorrow through today's environment. So, you know, you've got this kind of reflective, thing that we all do. You've kind of got this assisted thing where you could say, hey, you know, just modify the environment for this condition. Then you've got this kind of adaptive state where you can preconditioning, spaces. You know, I think smart cities are all about preconditioning, but I think that's pretty scary stuff if you actually think through the process.
Mm-hmm. What I think is a little bit funny about this also is that there may be those listeners who are hearing you. And some non-zero percentage of them may have just kind of declared that you're a kook. And they're like, this guy's got way too much information going on. But those are the same people that go and see science fiction movies where Arnold Schwarzenegger gets out of his bed on Mars. And his house says, welcome, you know, hello, your vitamin A level is a little bit low. We'll be, you know, I'll be putting that into your juice this morning.
Yeah.
And then we noticed your heart rate was up last night. Did you have a nightmare? And we think that's awesome. I feel like what you're doing actively is the beginning of what will then happen passively.
Well, it's funny because every time I speak at a conference or someone talking about, you know, I have an opportunity to speak with someone as cool as you. People always go, you actually are living in the future. And I'm like, no, I'm living in what we call the present. I'm just paying more attention, right? So, you know, I'm not like some brilliant person. I'm a guy who likes to hack data. I'm a guy who likes to buy consumer gadgets. I live in pre-tail. I live in connected devices. And I think, and ultimately, you know, I spent a decade as a SQL DBA. When you start to realize that life is a select statement, why wouldn't you build the best parts of it? You know, and this is, you know, and I believe, you know, ultimately, I've said it a million times. I'll say it again. People need to work. And how do we build a platform for people to work? And if they don't work, how do we let them not work and still make a living? And, you know, mom making cookies is doing a lot more than making cookies. That information's all sorts of good.
Certainly as honorable a hobby as any other hobbies that I've heard about, whether it be coupon clipping or all the other things that people use to pass their time, although you've got data to show for it. A buddy of mine here in Portland, Ward Cunningham, is a technologist, and he made the wiki. When I went over to his place a couple of years ago, he has quantified data, not on himself, but on the plants around his house. He knows about the humidity, like, of different corners of his house because different plants face the sun in different ways. And from his perspective, not only is it a super fun hobby because he's hacking Arduinos to do this work for him, but he gets to see how it affects things. And he says, those plants are growing better now because I kept the data. Actually, you know, I'm just realizing that I have even more data because I have a weather system, a little
you
tiny.
You have more data.
I have
you
a
do.
Little weather thing on top of my house that manages my watering of you my do. Lawn.
Yeah.
Now you're going to make me go and open that thing up and find out how to get the data off of it.
You have to be very careful because you'll wake up tomorrow and suddenly the world will be information and you'll want a relationship with it. And it's exciting.
See, now I want to unlock the information of my sprinkler system.
Yes. Free it. I mean, this is, I mean, all these brilliant developers out there are all looking for cool stuff. And yet we're making like, you know, silly games on our phones and sticky websites to keep people's eyeballs occupied. And I don't know. I just think we can do better as a species, you know.
So people can go and learn more about you at servicesphere.com. They Google for Chris Dancy. They'll find your Twitter, your LinkedIn. They'll find the Wired article. They'll find your slide shares. Where else do people need to go to check out information about the Quantified Self?
Well, there's a Quantified Self, the actual organization. They have a website where they've got just brilliant talks and about the collection and the technique, because there's also a very deep conversation now around the technique. Specifically, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people write about me this year. You know, there's a really nice NPR piece that people can listen to. I don't have a home. I mean, service here is where I kind of like put all sorts of stuff. But like I said, it's all just kind of out there. You just reach out to me, you know. My phone number's actually on the internet. So if you have any questions, it's good stuff. And I can't thank you enough. I was so enamored with you after I met you on the plane. And truth be told, everybody should know, I stalked you for, like, I don't know, it's been a year, like, to actually get to talk to you. So
so you've been low-key stalking me on Instagram, trying not to like my pictures.
Yes. Well, no, just kind of like, I think I've been like old school, sending you emails randomly. Hey, can we get together? Hey, can we get together? Because you've got such a brilliant perspective on work and the future of work and health. You know, I just felt like I'd met, like, you know, like Darth Vader, my quantified Darth Vader father.
Well, that is very kind. I appreciate you chatting with us on the show today.
Thanks so much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.